to Thanks for the Memories, where we are staunch anti-mafashniks. Did I get that right?
Anti-mafashnik action, yeah.
Anti-mafashnik action. You guys have no fucking... Thanks. I'm going to edit the rest of that out, but you have no idea how much we tried to workshop that to make it work.
We're sitting just there in the writer's room. Joss Whedon is like, it's got to be something progressive and feminist because I'm a feminist.
Yeah. It's like, there's something there. Hi, my name is Leslie. My pronouns are they, them. And I am in the hellmouth of South Philadelphia. And as always, my co-host is Kate.
I'm Kate. My pronouns are she, her, or they, them. And I'm normally in the hellmouth of South Philadelphia, but I'm in the hellmouth of West Philadelphia.
Born and raised. Wow.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot about that.
I think
of our hellmouth?
Yeah. I heard you got into a fight.
Some people were playing b-ball outside of the school.
Yeah, that's how I ended up in this hell now.
Do people from here are like so sick of that shit by now?
Oh, yeah.
100%. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was like 45 years ago.
People yeah, they're like, huh? What are you talking about?
Yeah. And then we have guests. We have very special guests this week. Simon and Imogen from the incredibly funny and cool podcast,
aww,
Go Hon or Go Home. I laughed like I was making a joke, but that's just because I'm so happy for y'all to be here.
Yeah, we got these schmucks on.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. The really cool podcast about a children's anime. Sure thing, Leslie.
Leslie is nervous giggling.
I am. Because
they're
like,
in the presence of geniuses.
Well, yeah. And also, like, Goku might be listening.
As a former gifted child. No.
Do you think Goku listens to podcasts?
Well, he can't read.
Oh, well.
So, yeah. What else is he going to do?
So, yeah. Okay.
He has to get information somehow.
It's true.
I feel like he would try to, like, talk back to the recording.
They're my friends. I like it when they're in my ears.
I love that dumb idiot.
Hey, here's the top of Apple iTunes. Well, you want to fight? Oh, sorry. We cut each other off.
I guess we have to introduce ourselves as well before we start jumping straight into Goku
Jones.
Please.
It's compulsory.
I'm Imogen. My pronouns are they, them, and I'm in New Zealand, in Wellington at the moment. It's many, many miles away from you. I'm in the future.
Yeah.
My name is Simon. My pronouns are any and all. But I always get he, him'd at work and stuff, so I quite like when friends use other ones because it's kind of a refreshing change. It's like the taste of Coca-Cola as it comes out of the bottle. This episode is not sponsored by Coca-Cola, by the way, but you can pay them.
Dude, we wish, yeah.
I mean, if it was, it would be okay.
Do you know what I would do for Coca-Cola money? Are you kidding me?
It's yeah.
Very anti-Mbashnik of you.
Yeah, be
God
very involved in the Colombian death squads. I don't know what you're getting at, Leslie.
We do things a little differently in the United
Facilitate
States.
Facilitate the cocaine trade. What's the implication here?
Hey, you know, nice work if you
can
get it.
We love cocaine.
You know that Coca-Cola
Thanks for the memories. We love cocaine.
And that's the slogan.
And that's how I got all that cocaine money.
Sponsored by cocaine.
Sponsored by cocaine.
Rubbing it on my teeth.
Anyway, that's gonna sound horrendous to somebody because, like, you can see me doing it, but all they're gonna hear is just people with misophonia, these sniffles
just
going like
like pig noises.
Every time, on Go Hon or Go Home, and Imogen will just make a funny noise, and then it makes me laugh. They keep doing it, and it's gotta be so annoying for the people listening. But I cannot speak up and say don't do that because I'm doubled over. So
I do that specifically to annoy you when you edit the podcast.
Amazing.
Those are little presents for future Simon.
You know, listen to me slurping some water or something. Edit this out, bitch.
Beautiful. And the problem is, I know people who listen to the podcast, so like, and I in fact am dating one of them, so my partner Gigi will sometimes like do a noise that Imogen has made on Go Hon or Go Home to make me laugh, and it just is the worst. but also really, that's really good.
I'm
but
invading
also,
your life.
No,
it's like God
you're
damn,
invading
yeah.
my life.
That's cute though. It's like deep lore.
Yeah,
deep
you're dronifying
lore.
The people in my life somehow.
It's my charisma.
Is baby Gronk getting rizzed up by Imogen? Who knows?
Is that still a thing? Is baby Gronk still a baby?
I think that
no,
he is still
Gronk
alive.
Must be a toddler by now.
He's still alive? Okay, well, that's good.
I hope
guess.
So. I mean, all the protein shakes probably cannot be good. He's going to have IBS growing up. That's all.
He's going to be in a diaper for the rest of his life, so he'll continue to be baby.
Well, maybe he'll make a lot of money for the IBS
Foundation.
Warriors. Yeah.
The, IBS Warriors.
He can be a well-paid IBS warrior.
Yeah, spokes baby.
I did just confuse IBS and IDF there, which is not
Oh, that's not great. Yeah.
Oops.
I was like, can you make that joke?
Oops.
It's just a video. Well, I mean,
political climate?
You can, given like... you know, there's a lot of like Ashkenazi people will joke about their stomachs and stuff like that, but it's not a like a politically relevant thing.
No, I was just as someone who has constant tummy troubles, I feel like I can make IBS jokes.
Yeah,
but I will not be making IDF jokes tonight.
No, thank you. What we will
Irritable
be doing,
Buffy
though.
Syndrome.
There you go. There we go.
Sorry.
Saved it.
I'm
Saved
from
the
Hellmouth. I'm not from the Hellmouth. I'm currently living in the Hellmouth of Kitty Kitty Door Hamilton, which is like in New Zealand's cultural context, a Hellmouth. Like nobody wants to be here. So,
ooh, chlamydia sense. Capital of New Zealand.
Ooh, that was in the 2000s. We don't know if it's still true.
Is that
why
for
all
you
the,
the koalas?
Yes,
are the koalas in New Zealand?
Y'all don't have them there? Oh, okay.
That's just Australia.
They can't swim
because
they can't swim.
Yeah, they can't get to an
the
island.
The ecologies could not be more different. New Zealand is an island, or series of islands, which was like isolated for so long that the introduction of anything else to this country just decimated its native populations.
Killed everything.
The flora and fauna, yeah. So, like, opossums, not opossums, the American ones, but marsupial possums, are endangered in Australia, but in New Zealand they are a pest.
Oh no.
So much so that we have like there are conspiracy theories about the ways that the Department of Conservation controls the population and stuff like that. Like it's in the public consciousness. So
wow. Put that on the flag. Just well, like all of what you just said.
A dead possum. A dead yeah.
That's a really big flag.
Just like its eyes crossed.
Tire tracks going off into the distance.
It's like a bottle that says poison on it. Next
yeah,
to
yeah, skull and bones.
Yeah.
Little yeah.
logo. I love that. Well, I would say let's do some vibes, but I feel like we've just been doing that anyway.
Yeah, we're doing vibes.
Does anybody have anything like I don't know something cool that happened to them this week? Anything they want to like. Share. No. Okay. Cool. We're all
nope.
just striving and surviving. I get it. Okay.
I've just had the most boring week.
The vibes today are good. The vibes in general for the last couple of weeks are bad.
Rancid. Yeah. No. I feel you.
Well, I'm glad you're having a good day.
Yeah.
So
I'm
far,
glad
even though it's only what time is it? 11.
I am actually it's interrupting my date day for you. So.
Oh no! Sorry,
you're on a date with all with a bunch of Buffy fans.
Yeah, you know what? And I couldn't ask for anything more.
We're a poly cute.
No.
All right.
They should write a New York Times article about us.
They should.
I would rather not.
I don't need the scrutiny.
Yeah, for me it would be the ethical incel. I think.
Incel, but cool.
Mm-hmm.
Incels are cool now.
Incels are in.
They're making it back.
In for incel. Should I open up the wiki tome?
Yeah, let's do it. Oh, if you didn't know, this is a podcast about Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh my god!
I thought it was about Goku.
I feel like we're getting our wires crossed, but yeah, like, let's do it.
All right, so we are in season 6, episode 3 and 4. Our first episode is Afterlife, and the synopsis on the wiki is like a novel. So yeah, I'm just gonna
it's the fucking Mahabharata.
It's the weirdest thing. They're all about two sentences long except for this one. I don't really know why. I don't know who wrote it and why.
Yeah, Jerry, but... the guy who maintains the Buffy wiki.
Someone who really loves the ghost.
Yeah, he's into it.
I do love this episode. It's not a happy episode, but I love it.
Yeah. These episodes were both written by Jane Espenson, I think. And she's one of my favorite Buffy writers.
She's a great Buffy writer. So this was written by Jane Espenson, directed by David Solomon. Buffy has been resurrected from the grave, and although she's a bit shaken from her return trip to a hell dimension, everything would appear to be falling back into place. Or is it? After reassociating Buffy, who we find out has been dead for 147 days, with her once familiar surroundings and friends, strange things begin happening. Did the gang bring back a tortured and evil Buffy from the grave? Or did something else come with her? This is the craziest. Now I'm just going to read it. Why is Spike suddenly returning to his romantic days? I don't understand that sentence. And our two fave mega witches, Willow and Tara, start hitting the books.
Are you sure this is Wikipedia? Find out why...
Yes. To find out why several demonic possessions are taking place within the clique. Oh, click. It's spelled wrong. This person doesn't know how to spell click. C-L-I-Q-U-E. They spelled it C-L-I-C-K.
I can't explain this, but this was written with one hand.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on.
This was written by a 14-year-old.
Kate, finish it out, but I would like to address some things.
Okay. What they find out is almost as shocking as Buffy's death and resurrection. No, it's not. It is not that shocking. Anyway.
Okay, I wanna address some things. First of all, you missed my favorite line, which says, are you ready for the first real mano a mano? Hang on. Mano
a mano. I don't have that!
Mano a mano is spelled MONO-A-MONO.
That's when two people are sick.
Yeah, exactly. So what I think happened here is I think the first two or three sentences is what was originally written. And then somebody's drunk idiot brother watched this episode and was like, I have got to hack into the mainframe and talk about several demonic possessions and our two favorite mega witches, Willow and Tara. And then the very end, it says, as Spike puts it, quote, the thing about magic, there's always consequences, always, end quote. What the fuck?
You and I have a different, once again, have a different wiki.
I don't know, man.
We're learning that
maybe this is getting
Buffy
updated
wiki,
in real time.
Yeah, the Buffy wiki is actually, it's like a personal wiki that is created just for you. It's
holy shit, do you think this is like AI? I'm not even joking.
Oh, maybe.
Oh. Are you ready for the first real mano a mano?
Mono a mano? I'm actually not ready for the first mano a mano.
That's fucking insane.
I think that's how COVID started. I'm not quite sure. But...
Exactly, yeah.
I'm not ready for number two. I'm going to be real.
No, I'm not.
Anyway, off to a banger start.
Yeah.
But, you know, before we get started, because we didn't really ask this, what is y'all's, like, Buffy origin story?
This episode is so all over the place structurally. I love it. This is like House of Leaves. You're going to have citations to the previous, like, back to minute 5:30 and then.
It is. It's like a choose your own adventure book. Turn to page 17 if Timmy jumps off the bridge.
When you were a kid, did you ever just read them from cover to cover?
Yeah, it made no fucking sense.
Just like fuck yourself up, like drugs for children. You know, you read it from the start and then to the end.
I used to just like cheat with those things, and I'd like keep a page with like each of my fingers so that
thumb.
I could like backtrack get the right path. But I'd end up just like my whole hand in this book trying to figure out which path I was
like
taking.
Little fleshy breadcrumbs, so you can find your way back.
Could you tell we were competitive children?
Flesh crumbs,
flesh crumbs.
Bit of love nail that. In this one.
We should probably answer the question that we were asked that we immediately turned
into. I've already forgotten what it is. Oh, yeah, Buffy origin story. Let's go.
I know that Simon had watched it earlier, but we actually both watched four seasons or something over the first lockdown. Was that right?
We got into halfway through season 6.
Yeah, but that was after, wasn't it?
We started watching it beforehand over like streaming together when we were on Discord, I think. And some previous sites that have no longer exist, like Rabbit or whatever, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Rab.it or something. And then in lockdown, we powered through most of the rest. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So fairly recently, like you guys didn't like grow up with it or anything.
No, I didn't really have TV.
I sort of did.
Okay.
That's kind of like half the premise of our show is that like I had happy parents, so I wasn't allowed to like watch cartoons. It was like a solid like 10-year period where like there was just no TV at my house. So there's like lots of stuff pop culturally that I kind of missed out on.
Imogen doesn't know what Vegeta is. Yeah.
That's just unforgivable.
It sounds like a comment more on my sex life than my pop
culture. I know. I was confused for a second.
Men don't know how to find Vegeta.
No. Yeah, I was like, that doesn't have anything to do with pop culture. I can find a Vegeta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's like a 150k tweet that's just like, y'all ever know when like he's trying to find the Vegeta or something like that? It's like, okay, just inexplicably this stuff gets like 300,000 likes or something, you know.
Love that.
Oh, yeah, but man. No, I don't know a lot of things, but I have watched.
Oh, like, no, that's
I have
okay.
watched all the Buffy, but more recently.
You're like, nice, woe is me, nice. I didn't have television. I read things and learned a lot about the world and like how to think.
Yeah, it's like I know every like plant scientific name, but I missed out on watching like fucking like Naruto. It's like, who cares?
I do actually remember being like 12 or something and seeing ads for Angel on TV.
Oh, yeah.
At a different house, and thinking that it looked like super cool, and I really wanted to watch it, and then I never watched it then. But then I came back to it a little bit as an adult.
Well, there you go. Once you're done with Buffy, I think that's what we're gonna start doing because I haven't seen it.
I
haven't seen any.
I love Angel.
Yeah.
We started watching a little bit of it simultaneously, like while we were not simultaneously, but you know, like going back and forth while we were watching Buffy because some of it is like. Like there'll
interconnected.
Be a crossover episode.
Yeah, there's crossover.
Yeah, like you kind of have to follow both storylines. It's like quite involved. It's like all those like Marvel movies, you know, they're
yeah.
I don't know what the fuck is going on in Spider-Man. It's like, oh, did you watch Ant-Man 3? I'm like, no, why would I watch Ant-Man 3?
I've watched four Marvel movies, I think.
Yeah.
So in any of the ones that I've seen, I have no idea. Like, someone will show up and I'm just like, is
like
he a guy?
Like, hello?
Is he a guy I should know
you can't
about?
Just ask people if they're a guy.
Is this a guy?
Is this a guy?
Excuse me. I stand up in the middle of the movie theater. Excuse me, is this a guy?
Yeah, I stopped watching after Iron Man 2. I haven't seen a single Marvel movie after Iron Man 2.
Marvin
movie. Dude, if they came out with fucking a Marvin the Martian movie from Looney Tunes, I would lose my shit.
Their opening night. Yeah.
They should fucking, oh my God, we'll talk. I'll have to talk about it another time. But they need to fucking release Coyote versus Acme, or I'm literally going to put David Zaslav in a toilet. Fuck that
guy. I think
you
should.
Fuck that guy. Fuck WB. Like, for real, though.
This is an anti-David Zaslav podcast.
Dude, yeah.
If you thought we were really into him.
No.
Because I know how, like, you know,
he sucks,
you might get confused.
He sucks shit.
Yeah, in this episode,
almost
every time
as much
you
as...
hear... Sorry.
No, you're fine. I was going to say almost as much as Joss Whedon to try to get us back on track.
Oh, hey.
I was going to say.
Let's talk about this episode.
Every time you hear the word emphashnik in this episode, think David Zaslav.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. My experience, I think I said this in the pre-show, but and Imogen knows this too, but like I was 12 years old living in China. We lived in Shenyang, which is in Liaoning province. And there were not enough rooms in our apartment for everybody in the family, so I slept on the couch when I was that age. And of course, my mother and my sister wanted to watch Buffy, and so because they bought it on DVD from one of those like markets where it's like not a legit DVD place, you know what I mean?
Literally,
I love that shit. A place where they would slide open a slot in the door to see who was outside.
No way!
And you're like, "Do you have any Buffy?
What's the password?
Hey kid, Angel, season 5, it gets better." So they would watch it, and it was either like learn to fall asleep with the television on, which I could also do, but I actually liked Buffy, so I stayed up and watched it. And some of it is not quite appropriate for a 12-year-old, but weirdly the thing which my mother was the most against, which probably explains part of my psychology as well, was when people would kiss, she'd just be like, "Oh, this is unnecessary." She was a pure teen before it was popular.
Unnecessary.
She's just like, get to the next bit. And like, at first I thought, anyway, it was equal opportunity, you know. It wasn't like, you know, when Tara and Willow do it, she's like, "Oh, why did we have to watch this?" It's just like,
okay,
whenever,
yeah,
Angel and Buffy do it,
didn't like
eh.
Smooching of any kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel
like she's,
yeah,
like, she's the one who writes all those tweets like, why are sex scenes in movies, they don't forward the plot?
Yeah.
The characters did not consent to us watching Willow and Tara 20 years later.
Yeah.
Oh, good lord.
Holy shit. Ugh, I just got goosebumps.
Anyway, so I saw that stuff, and it also, it gave me certain fears and things, but also, like, I kind of grew up with it in that sense, and that was my introduction to Buffy, you know.
Cool. Well, yeah, so we read the synopsis for Afterlife, so let's just dive right in. That was like 45 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But
that's what happens when you invite the tangent people on your podcast.
We're already the tangent podcast, and inviting the tangent people onto the tangent podcast is like quadruple
tangent. Oops, old tangent.
Oops, old tangent. But this is an interesting episode because it is sort of like, it opens like kind of in media res, like shit's like, mm-hmm, happening from the previous episode. They're still like in the inciting action, like the demons are still, like the weird biker demons are still in town. They're leaving because they killed their leader, but they're, mm-hmm, like on their way out, and the gang is like still roaming the streets, and they're like, "Oh, it's so dangerous." I was like, this looks like downtown. It's like, this looks fine. I don't know.
That's
what
just
you guys are so scared
about. Biker gangs.
Yeah, but I mean, they were leaving, you know.
Yeah,
they were getting out of Dodge.
Mm. Well, and they don't know where Buffy is.
Oh yeah, so they know Buffy was reanimated and has popped out of her coffin.
A Buffy in the box,
Kill Bill style.
Yeah, that sucks. But yeah, so now she's made it home with Dawn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and something I found to be really interesting was, like, you kind of realize when she's home with Dawn, and then Spike comes in, and Dawn is like, "Spike, I have to show you something." Dawn and Spike and Buffy become this kind of like safe trio for a little while. Like, everyone else is sort of at odds with Buffy. You know, like, they want stuff from her that she's not really ready to give them yet. And Dawn and Spike are both kind of, like, for various reasons. I think Dawn, because she's family, and, like, Buffy died for her, obviously. And Spike, because he's been through, mm-hmm, so much, like, torture and hell. And he, you know, also had to claw himself out of a coffin.
Mm-hmm.
So like, he fully understands what Buffy is going through in a way that, like, her friend, like, she's very distanced from her friends at this point.
Mm. Right.
I really love when Spike is nice, and it bothers me that, like, you don't get more of this usually. Like, he's like, it's such a good, like, they have such a good, like, dynamic when, like, he's not being a shit cunt.
Best use on the podcast, baby.
Yay!
Yay!
I'm gonna put in like a special bell every time you say that. Yeah.
I wasn't even trying to work that in there, but then I realized when I said it. But yeah, no, it's it's a really like kind of satisfying character dynamic, and it makes it extra frustrating when they like veer away from that for like seemingly no reason in other episodes. But yeah, I also like really enjoyed their like safe kind of bubble as well. I know there's like a lot of chat about like Dawn being like annoying, but I feel like she's like such a good sister in this episode as well. It's like quite a I don't know, it's like a touching scene.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because the up until now the dynamic has been Buffy is the caretaker, the provider, the step-in mom when their mom actually passes away, and for a brief minute Dawn has to fill that role, and she's kind of bad at it. Because she's just kind of like going around like, oh, we changed around some of the chairs and took out the tables in the room. And it's like you could tell like she's trying really hard, but she like doesn't know how to like be that kind of like caretaker that like, because that's always been a role that Buffy has filled. So I thought it was really interesting to watch her like try her best at it, because she knows that Buffy needs it right now. So that was just really like a sweet kind of moment for me.
Yeah, she recognizes when the friends are crowding around that Buffy is being overstimulated and needs to like.
Yeah.
I was like, relatable content. But there's so many people looming over who want things for her and want to like say things to her and at her, and then Dawn is kind of like trying to corral her away, but she doesn't quite know how to navigate that socially, you know? Because the others they're big people, and she's not. I think it's quite interesting that they have found their groove almost after Dawn's functional utility as a MacGuffin is gone. She was originally, I think, pitched as a character who was about 11 years old, which is why she reads as like, get out, get out, get out, like really, really annoying and at the start of season 5, but they've found out how to write her now, I think, and the women writers are a little bit better at doing it.
Yeah, maybe that.
Yeah, because she does like read young often. Like, there's a scene later where she like, you know, it's like alluded to that she sees some sort of like demon genitalia.
That's not a whole.
And it's like, what is that? And she's supposed to be 15. Yeah. I don't buy that at all.
Yeah,
that's a weird place.
We all know what a dick is at 15.
Yeah.
Okay, speak for yourself. All right. I was an emphatic.
Oops. Ooh. Hey there, suckers. It's Leslie. You know, back in my day, I worked at an adult shop in college, so I know a thing or two about fine adult toys, and that's why I really like bunnyshop.com. It's not your average adult store. You know, think of it as your very own adult shop, thoughtfully curated by your fashionable best friend. They take their selection seriously. They handpick each item for their aesthetics, safety, and top-notch quality. Bunny Shop is a modern love shop dedicated to elevating your most intimate moments. And here's the best part, you get to shop online in the comfort of your own home. And if you know me and you know how much I don't like talking to people, you know how much I love that. You're only browsing the best and cutest products out there. Plus, they ship quickly and discreetly, ensuring your little secret stays safe. So no matter where you are in your journey, whether you're a BDSM pro or completely new to the world of sex toys, Bunny Shop has got you covered. Their thoughtfully selected range includes toys, accessories, and wellness products to suit every desire and preference. And you know we love accessibility and inclusivity on the pod. So let go of any shyness and embrace your self-love journey with confidence. Save 20% off your order today when you use code FANGS. That's FANGS, all uppercase. So visit bunnyshop.com, BUNNYSHOPPE.com.
But yeah, I mean, I think like Spike recognizing one of like the most powerful, well, there's a super powerful scene with Buffy and Spike at the end, obviously, that we'll talk about. But the like a really powerful moment with Buffy and Spike is when he notices like the dirt all over her hands, and then her hands like clearly have clawed her way out of the ground, and like he knows that like very viscerally, and like she is super embarrassed about it. Like, she kind of feels like ashamed that she has to admit that that's like the way that she came back.
None of her friends dress her wounds, which really bothered me.
Yeah.
None of them care about her. They care about their own needs and like, oh, now Buffy's back in our life. We're safe because the Slayer's here. There's a really, really kind of gross dynamic going on with the Scoobies in this point of the series, I think. And Willow is like, she should be thanking me is the entitlement of it. It's really weird. Like, at this point, you already get the hints that the magic is kind of twisting Willow because she's like waiting for Buffy to thank her, you know? And she's like, oh, I've just got to wait for her to get over it. And then she can kind of like, you know, say how powerful I am.
100%. Yeah, Kate and I were talking about this earlier, but like, yeah, there's a scene in I want to say season 5 too. Oh, when Buffy gets kidnapped by Glory, Dawn gets kidnapped by Glory, and Buffy like completely shuts down, and Willow is just screaming at her like, "You got to get up because we need you," and I'm just like, "What the fuck?" Like, you and again in scenes like this where it's like you have not given a person who is clearly in the middle of trying to process trauma the chance to do that, the chance to decompress, the chance to like just fucking have like a shower. She was still like, Dawn was literally like cleaning dirt off of her.
Yeah.
Like,
I feel like it's extra pronounced as well, because you have that point of like Spike's just like realized that, you know, what her hands have been like clawing at the dirt, and he's like, you know, he takes over from Dawn, who's been a little uncertain the whole time, and like sends her to go get like medical supplies, and they like sit down literally to like dress Buffy's wounds, and that's when everyone bursts in and interrupts it. And Spike obviously like leaves immediately, so you're left with like this, like she was about to get the care she needed, and then everyone just jumps in and like starts bombarding her, and then she just leaves to go to sleep without actually getting like any help. Which just like really like rubs salt in that wound, I think.
Yeah.
And then her pictures go all fucked up, so it's even worse.
Things are not great for Buffy.
So sort of the B plot, the main plot is like trying to get Buffy back to some semblance of normalcy. The B plot is that she brought like they made a weird ghost demon. Like, the spell that they used to bring her back also created this weird fucking ghost parasite, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a payment. Like, that's how Willow puts it.
Yeah, exactly.
That,
like,
they owe something to the universe
for taking back,
bringing Buffy
back. Yeah.
And if they simply just, like, kill the demon, it undoes everything else. Which, I don't know why they had to write it that way, but...
Yeah,
I liked Anya's response to that. She's like, that's not a payment. That's buy one, get one free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, again, Emma Caulfield, comedy MVP in every scene. But it's
She's so good.
She's so good. But it's really funny how, like, to me as well, I was like, the universe doesn't... surely wouldn't morally weigh like a demon is bad, otherwise it wouldn't create them and they wouldn't exist. So it feels like they should have taken something away, and that had been the arc of the season. It's like, oh, how do we deal with like we killed somebody, and maybe they didn't even know them, it was just someone in Sunnydale, but like everything gets fucked up because of that or something. Like, that's a good season theme arc, right? You know?
Yeah.
It's really weird that it was just like, it's a thing which does scary shit to you in your house.
Well, that's always been kind of a method that they use for an episode, especially like a more towards the beginning of a season episode. Like, they did it with like the Dracula episode, where like a bigger story is happening, but they also need to have like cool fight action scene. Yeah. So like, how do you introduce a thing that's not necessarily related to this like dramatic overarching emotional story that they're trying to tell, but also something that you need to punch. So you know,
They're on a new...
got a punch quota.
Yeah, we talked about this, like, the last episode.
Yeah.
Like, they're on a new network.
Yeah, so they have
to... So they also have to prove that the show is, like, entertaining.
Yeah.
Even though for us as fans, I feel like we're all like, yeah, give us all the trauma and the,
exactly,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah.
But it is really funny that they do... They're forced by television structure and writing and network ratings and stuff. To be like, you know, we've got to drive really fast to get back for the big action climax. And then it does not matter at all that they're present. In fact, Buffy's like, no, take Dawn out of here. So it's like, why did you even show up?
Yeah, why did we do this?
There just needs to be tons of movement. You're right. Like, it can't be that static.
It's like jingling keys in front of your face. It's like, listen, look at this, dumbo. And we don't need that. Like, even I think new fans, you know, don't need that. But
yeah.
Oh, well.
This is unrelated, but
I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff that, like, you can explore, I think, through, like, the idea. I mean, they're also sort of building this idea, obviously, that by taking this, by Willow, like, going this far with magic, she is changing herself quite a bit.
Yeah.
And that, like, she's going down roads that are, like, not ethical, and she's making a lot of sort of like bargains that she can't actually handle. And I think that's like interesting enough, you know, that like she didn't really think about, she wanted so badly to save her friend that she didn't think about any consequences really. And I understand that. I think that's very human.
Yeah.
But like, she's so caught up in the idea that she like saved Buffy. And that Buffy needed her so badly, which I guess I kind of understand too. Like, they always need Buffy. So, like, thinking that, like, you're doing something then in exchange to help Buffy. But then never really asking. Like, it's so selfish, you know?
Yeah.
Just assuming that Buffy was in hell.
Yeah, I would be so offended.
Yeah.
And all my friends are like, you were in hell, right? You were in the worst hell. You were in like the evil dimension where evil people
like,
go being tortured.
Like, and you're like, what? Was I that bad? why did you assume that I was
like,
going to go
like,
there?
Especially Buffy, she like literally sacrificed herself to like save everybody and like
live
her life for
the good. Yeah, if that
don't
give you a pass with St. Peter, like, I don't fucking know what does.
Welcome back, you're a cunt. Anyway.
We all assumed you went to hell.
Yeah.
This is a really
you did,
good
right?
meta. This is a really good meta metaphor for renewing a show which shouldn't be renewed for another season. Season, right? Like, Buffy has completed her arc, and Willow's like, no, she needed me to bring her back. It's like, she was in heaven, she completed what she needed to do, death was her gift, that's it, baby.
Yeah,
like,
there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, Willow is like Joss Whedon bargaining with the WB. Like, come on, we can come up with two more seasons worth of shit.
Standing over the writer's room and every actress individually being like, you need me, don't you? Just like, come it on.
Yeah.
You need the money.
I feel like we did jump ahead
a little bit. Okay.
Because we didn't really get to the big scene with Spike at the end of that episode. Just
No, that's the best. That scene like is burned in my mind.
It's such,
forever.
The thing is, he's such a bad obsessive boyfriend vibes. But the line "Every night I save you" is just so good.
Yeah.
I know.
Like,
I definitely slid off my chair.
James,
my basement is flooded.
Yeah, we love.
That's why it leads
into
the next episode.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, Spike. Oh yeah, that's what the pipe.
It's a metaphor.
That's what the pipes bursting is a metaphor for Buffy.
Buffy's just
squirting.
Listen, she's been dry for 147 days.
Yeah, right.
The first boy who
it's
looks
true.
Like James Masters and says that to her, the basement is just sobbing.
Yeah, she's like, whoosh. I would love to talk about, like, what do y'all think about, I mean, this is very, like, Christian, you know, just this idea that, like, Buffy is going to something of, like, a Christian heaven. Versus like a Christian hell, you know, like the way she describes it is like, okay, that's pretty.
See,
much.
I thought it felt very. I'm not very familiar with like any other religion. I'm not even really familiar with my own religion, which is Irish Catholic. but it felt very like Zen or like Eastern tradition to me, where she was talking about like she wasn't really, she was herself, but there was nothing there. There was like no time, no scenery. She just kind of was existing. So I don't know necessarily, like, I don't know what the interpretation of that would be, but that felt very, like, I don't know, kind of like Buddhist to me. I don't know.
Well, there was
a... I guess maybe just because she called it heaven.
There's a distinction. Well, she's... Yeah. Sorry, no, go on.
No, go ahead.
There's a distinction, I think, here between, like, common Catholic person heaven, which is, like, people are sitting with angel wings on clouds and having hearts, you know, like a Simpsons kind of depiction, right? But most serious theologians would probably describe something as akin to what Buffy's talking about. And I think that there is a lot of commonality with different religions in terms of how they would conceptualize of a paradise of some sense like that, right?
Okay.
So it kind of depends on who you're talking to, right? But there are, like... Catholic scholars who would probably talk about it in that sense. I think Roger Ebert actually mentions that in one of his reviews, and I can't remember what the movie is for, but he's like, this is probably a lot closer to what people would talk about when they talk about, you know, like Kevin is a serious theologian or something like that, right? You know, but
interesting.
So it's not Christian, but also I think the idea that Buffy like takes those things and then makes it its own kind of hodgepodge mythology is one of the really fun things about it, because I really like a divergence from the trend of magic is just a gun and magic is like a scientific, you know, A equals A, Brandon Sanderson bullshit, you know, where it's like you can do equations with this and you as a fan, if you understand the lore deeply enough, you can like know what would happen. It's like, well, isn't the fun of magic that it's like you're doing weird monkey's paw contracts with fairy creatures and you don't know what the hell's going to happen, you know, like,
yeah. Hmm. Yeah, like, not necessarily like a fucking like band-aid on everything, you know, like you know, we solved world hunger with magic or whatever, or like we stopped World War II with magic or whatever, but
we
something that's a little bit
anti-mefashnik action, actually.
Anti-mefashnik, yeah, but something that like I like it to be a little more loosey-goosey than just like literally math, but with sparkles.
Sparkly math.
Man.
Yeah, I don't think it was, it didn't feel, it wasn't like a judgmental question. It was more just like a open-ended question about, like what heaven and hell, I guess, looks like to the show.
Yeah, I did actually like that she kind of clarifies that she doesn't understand how things work, and like, you know, she's been beyond the grave, and like she hasn't come back knowing the truth about what everything is. Like, it was just kind of another experience, and she just she says like, I don't understand like theology or like dimensions, but I was happy, and that's kind of like, I don't know, that's all they really offer, but it's also all they really need to offer.
Yeah, because it's personal. It's not necessarily coming from, like a school of thought or like a doctrine or whatever, or like an idea that a religion has. It's just literally coming from her experience, from being there, you know? So I think, I like that a lot.
It's interesting the two exterior daylight scenes are diametric opposites in that regard, I think, in that episode. So there's like the scene where everybody wakes up in the morning, they're like, Buffy, you shouldn't be up. And then they start like hug boxing her in a way that's very acute to the trans femme experience. And it's very much like, honey, you look so, your jaw's not clocky. You look so good. Like, there's just something really like off-putting about the way that they're kind of, you know, doing this really like dancing around her, but trying to be like, no, like, you should patrol and all this sort of stuff. But before she comes out, they're just like, she's fucked in the head. She's like, you know, there's something deeply wrong with this girl.
Dude, they do that in so many episodes and it's so fucked up.
Yeah, it's not good. No. It's like, I mean, I don't know if part of it is just, it's 20 years ago and people weren't as, like, trauma informed as they are now. And, you know, like, it's just everyone's reactions to her are very strange, considering they're, you know, they're like young, like early 20 somethings, and their friend is like in crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like, and they have like kind of a queer chosen family that they've all like assembled. You would think they would be a little bit more attuned to what's going on with Buffy.
Yeah. And
yeah, it's very uncomfortable, like these episodes, the way that they treat her. And it does have just such a stark contrast to like how Dawn and Spike are acting towards her as well, which is, I think, like, I don't know, it builds up some like interesting character dynamics, which I don't know if I vibe with how they resolve those later in the season, but I don't want to throw in any spoilers. But I did also, one of the things that I liked about the second sunlight scene, that's just like a subtle detail, is, you know, she does this whole like emotional kind of like offload to Spike, but then also like can't really deal with being vulnerable with him, so she like walks into the sunlight so that he can't like touch her or follow her. Which is quite like a, I don't know, there's a powerful detail, I think.
It's so beautifully softly lit in the shade as well, with that, like, just that kind of rim light on her hair. And it is angelic. It's really interesting. But they're like, the setting is in a dumpy brick alleyway. And I'm like, it's just such a perfect encapsulation, right? Where they're like, well, she's talking about heaven and she's having this kind of real conversation. Because she's just been in the interior of the magic shop where, for some reason, I noticed the costumes this time so much more, where Willow's wearing a shag pile carpet for some reason. And they dress her and Tara in like matching maxi dresses for some fucking reason. Which, like,
they're lesbians.
Well, I was going to say the costume art, the costume designer obviously, like, grew up in the 70s where that's just how lesbians dressed, and it's like carried forward, even though it makes no sense. And so because like my mother dressed that way in the 70s and stuff. Buffy just lies through her teeth and she's like, I was in hell and I should get this off my chest and thank you, Willow. And Willow's just like, clearly that's what she needed to hear, you know. And there's something so uncomfortable about the framing and the blocking. Then she walks out, and there's like a place which is not as like nicely set up as the magic shop set. It's just a dumpy alleyway. And then, it's the lighting is just so suffused with this kind of tenderness, you know? And I really like what you were saying about the blocking, Imogen, where she walks out into the sunlight and it's like, she's literally walking into the light, you know, but he can't follow her there.
Yeah. It's a really beautiful scene. And just the realization that like she was in this wonderful place where also she got to feel complete, you know. She got to feel like the life that she was meant to lead was done and she was good and like didn't need it to go on, and was like ready just for, you know, whatever new phase she was in. And then the idea of her friend, like when she's like, my friends pulled me out. Like, they just, like, literally just, like, grabbed me from like this nice place I was in.
I forgot.
And ripped me out.
I thought this was later. I thought that this is something which happens as a twist. But then, later on and once more with feeling and stuff. But it's so good that they set it up as dramatic irony at the start of the season, you know? I just really love that. It's quite powerful kind of dramatic motor for everything else.
Yeah. And then, like, one more image... Simon, you took a screenshot of it before we recorded, but like the Buffy walking through the graveyard by herself and the angel wings of like a I guess like a gravestone in the cemetery frame her, and it's like probably one of the most beautiful Buffy moments.
It's kind of funny. Yeah, we in the business like to call that foreshadowing, I think is what I said.
Right, yeah.
But it's really funny that it's clearly set up just for that, because she says, I'm going to patrol, and then there's one shot of her patrolling, and it's that.
Right, like nothing else happened.
The magic of television.
It's like they had that scene, and then they had to build an episode around it.
Yeah, they found that in B-roll. Yeah, like, they were like, and we're just like, holy shit.
Exactly.
From a different season.
Yeah, they didn't even have this plotted out yet. They were like, what if? Should we talk about the stupid demon?
Oh, yeah. Okay, I want to talk about... Okay, so it starts off being like a... They say it doesn't have a body. It's like non-corporeal, and that's its like deal, is that it's bouncing through different people or like possessing different people in the Scooby Gang, or like manifesting like clones of Buffy or whatever to like try and you know, manifest itself in our dimension. And when it's not doing that, it's the fucking, the little scarab guys in somebody's skin from the fucking mummy. Like that's CGI of just like a bump like moving around and slithering. Oh, it's so nasty.
Nobody at any point is like, wait, does anybody see that fucking huge lump on the floor?
Yeah, does anybody else see, like, yeah, the tile is like curved and now it's like a little, like a weird little rat underneath the floor. Like, that doesn't make no damn sense.
I really liked it a lot more when it was non-corporeal, yeah, and it was just like a parasite.
Yeah,
because it feels like body horror, like you know, like early Cronenberg, yeah, with no budget.
Mm-hmm. But,
but it's so crazy because like we're in season 6, it's 2001, I want to say, and like we've seen better CGI like in three or four seasons ago. So I have no idea. Maybe they just didn't really give a shit about this one. They just needed to like squirt out an episode, but
squirt.
But like, I was like, man, you really gotta like
every night
up
I
the
squirt
production
you
here. I miss every night I squirt you. I just miss the practical stuff. If it was like a practical thing, I think I would have liked it a lot better. I just miss a good wet puppet, man.
Mm.
I haven't seen a wet puppet in a long time with this show, and boy, I'm jonesing for one right now.
Yeah.
It's true. It's been a lot of very like real early CGI tricks. Mm-hmm.
There's some really
for
good
season 6 so
stuff
far
at the start. Like, I think we said this in the pre-show that one of the things which actually just pricked my subconscious before it turned a little bit goofy was when Buffy's walking over to the photographs and they turn into corpses.
Yeah.
In the photos, there's just something that's so visceral about that because I wasn't expecting it. And then I was like, ah, oh, fuck. But then as it goes on, the scary stuff that happens is just like, Google scary stuff. It's like, you know, Emma Caulfield is like cutting her face. And for some reason, what's really funny is when they start that scene, they're in bed and she's wearing full makeup. Like, she's got a bold lip color on.
Yeah, they're supposed to be.
Like, she doesn't
asleep
know how to be a human.
That's, well, that's gonna be on the
she's
pillow
learning.
She's like, you wear makeup, right?
I don't care though. She's been a human for like 2 years now. You do not keep that beautiful skin clear and not know how to, like, you know, de-apply your makeup at the end of the night.
Anya doesn't know about sunscreen. No.
Like, no. Oh, God.
Yeah. I think it's real interesting. It's like this episode, like, they could have had this be, like, the big bad for this season because there's, like, a really, like, kind of juicy psychological thriller sort of element to something that's, like, incorporeal, that's just, like, able to, like, get inside their heads and, like, turn them against each other and stuff. And that kind of, like, it's cut very short by them just going, well, let's make it punchable.
They just
manifest this like incorporeal spirit to like chop its head off, which is kind of, it feels like very anticlimactic.
Well, it's kind of easy because Willow goes Super Saiyan and her eyes roll back in her head and she's like just Kaioken times 20, like solid. And then it's like, well, fuck, you didn't need Tara at all for that. Like, there's this interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really
I liked
it's
that.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting because it harkens back to a couple of moments that Willow has done this where like Xander and Spike were beating the shit out of each other and she just like gets really quiet and goes, separate. And then both of them like shoot back on opposite sides of the room. So, like, she can do this, and it's, like, it's obvious that she's, like, getting more and more powerful because she can just simply say to do a thing, and then the thing gets done.
Yeah, and
it is a bummer that she, like, doesn't need Tara anymore, though.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Like,
that's going to cause some friction, for sure.
Yeah. Well, because no matter what, you're going to be stronger with another witch, even if the witch isn't as strong as you are.
Yeah.
I don't
imagine
know.
Imagine how
just
powerful
feels
a polycule
like
would be.
Right?
It's called a coven.
A lesbian witch polycule.
Hell yeah.
We've never seen anything like it before.
Once again, the world's
totally
problems would be solved
of
by...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, never in the world has there been a lesbian witch polycule.
Again, I'm waiting for the New York Times article about it.
Yeah.
No, I think it's there's just something. I agree with you, Imogen, that I think a better writing choice would have been, this is a season-long thing, and if you wanted to do the Willow thing, it's like, maybe she decides that she wants to give in to being, like, to become more powerful, to unite with this thing or something later on, you know? And it's like, because of what happens later on that's traumatic and stuff. Rather than these fucking nerds which show up in the next goddamn episode.
God.
Every scene with them is the worst shit I've ever seen in my life, and I hate them.
Yeah.
I really don't like them either.
Yeah, I tweeted something like they do not hit the same in 2024 as they did in 2001.
I'm sure it was dated then.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it was dated then, too, but it's, like, now we know what incels are. Mm-hmm. Mm. And, like, we have words for them, and we're just like, oh, okay, so you're guys who got, you know, radicalized on 4chan.
Yeah, whatever proto-chan, whatever, yeah.
Club Penguin, yeah.
2001. Yeah, Club Penguin. I got radicalized at Club Penguin. Habbo Hotel.
Did that happen? How many people got radicalized at Club Penguin?
Dude, a lot of people got something on Club Penguin. I don't know about
a lot of people became fairies from it, I'm sure.
Like, yeah.
Fairies!
I've never seen a penguin fairy. I gotta put that out there.
No one of those, but like you used to get this little pet that was like really fluffy and anyway.
What were they, like a puggle? Or something?
Puffle.
No, Puffle. Yeah. I remember those.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this arc kind of does, it almost feels like they're taking the piss when they've got this, like, really, like, emotionally deep, like, juicy storyline going on, and then they just, like, sidetrack to talk about these, like, fucking idiots who just, like, sit in a basement scheming 12-year-old schemes.
Well, oh, yeah.
Do we have anything that we want to touch on from Afterlife before we move on and Kate reads the wiki synopsis for Flooded?
I feel like it makes sense to segue, but I don't know about you, Jim.
Yeah.
No, I'm pretty happy moving on to the next one.
Most of what I want to talk about is in Flooded, so.
I can't believe we watched this, at you and me, Leslie, and didn't make a Flooded our basement
and that wasn't even in reference to that. I literally didn't even think about that because I'm a fucking moron.
You just said for the show.
Whatever. Yeah, that's right. That's we're so spontaneous. okay, Flooded. Buffy's readjustment to the land of the living is not going so hot. I don't know who's writing these anymore. Her basement is flooded, she's bankrupt, and oh yes, the Mephoshnik demon is hell-bent on killing her. Also, Giles returns, and a trio of slackers plot the takeover of Sunnydale. I think that's giving slackers a bad name.
Yeah.
Slackers are just, like, stoner guys who are generally, like, maybe useless, but not bad.
Yeah, it implies, like, a passivity, whereas, like, these guys are actively shit.
Yeah, exactly.
So, a couple things, behind the curtain things. So, originally, if it's not clear, it was meant to be Jonathan, Warren, and Tucker, who was the kid who released Hell Dogs during prom. Yes.
Mm. Devil Dogs,
yeah. And they, you know, it was the whole premise was like, here's a bunch of people who are maybe in like two or three episodes previously who like didn't get very big parts, but who are very good actors, like who could do, you know, good work. Let's give them a bigger role in this season. The guy who played Tucker couldn't make it, so the whole thing is that they got this other guy, Andrew, and then just said that he was Tucker's brother that also let hell demons loose, but during the school play, and they were flying monkey hell demons.
Mm-hmm. Right. I hope it was during the Wizard of Oz.
No, it's Romeo and Juliet.
No, they referenced Romeo and Juliet.
No.
Yeah.
I missed
Jonathan
that.
Jonathan says, like, some throwaway line that was like, oh, yeah, everybody was like, run, Juliet. Like, yeah. I just think it's funny. Okay, this is me just being a fucking nerd because, like, I'm obsessed with, like, people's IMDb credits. Mm-hmm. So the guy who played Tucker, his name is Brad Kane. Brad Kane was not only, do you remember the episode where Jonathan did the spell where he was, like, really fucking cool and everybody was in love with him?
Yeah,
superstar.
Yeah, thank you. There's a scene where he's doing like a lounge singing act.
Yeah.
Tucker, the actor Tucker, that's his singing voice.
Oh. What?
He is also, Brad Kane, the actor who played Tucker, he is also the singing voice of Aladdin in Disney's Aladdin in 1992.
Whoa. Huh. Oh my God. Yeah.
He's good.
So he just had better things going on than being
he was
stooge.
Like, I'm a little too fucking famous for this dopey ass show. I'm not coming back.
Disney calls me, like, you know, it's, they do a kind of Chet Baker thing with him as well, because he pulls out the trumpet in that scene, I think, and he's just like tooting along with a nice cool jazz song.
Yeah,
that's such a good episode. I remember that's when we when episode. That first came up, and me and Jim were just like, hell yeah, like when we realized the premise.
Yeah,
when they even like recut the theme song,
yeah,
like the intro credits.
So yeah, that it's all about Jonathan.
Like, oh, it's so funny.
It's great until you realize that he is assaulting people.
Yeah, not super great. The rest, though, pretty on point.
The rest is fun. Well,
who is it? Danny Strong is the actor.
Yeah, he's great.
He's fantastic, yeah. And he's such a small part in the show. So I think they must have realized, like, oh, we should give him more to do for this.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I like him. I don't really like Warren's either character or like acting or anything. It doesn't do anything for me. But I really like Danny Strong's work.
Because he's really just like a taller Jonathan.
Like, he's not charming, though, his character.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
yeah, that's true.
He's horrible. Yeah. He has no redeeming qualities. No. And Andrew is funny, too. He's a good actor.
Yeah, Andrew's very obviously coded gay as well, even though that doesn't get...
Not coded gay later. I mean, just gay.
Yeah, yeah. I think in the comics they reveal that he's in a male-living-male relationship. But anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I got some stuff in the comics later.
This episode is like, oh God, I hate talking about the trio. So I mostly want to talk about how I think Buffy should get paid for being a slayer. because she does have a job. She's just like doing a lot of unpaid labor. Mm. And so like she can't, you know, like have a house and like take care of everything and also be a slayer. But like she lives with her chosen family. Why were they not?
Yeah, like this.
What were they doing while she was dead?
I was like pondering this real hard as well. Is that like they're all, you know, on her case to like find a way to get more money? But she's got like 7 roommates. Like, can't they just get jobs?
Like, what the fuck are they doing?
Mm. But I guess that's kind of part of the whole attitude of it, is they're constantly just like waiting for Buffy to save them, even from like really mundane shit. and it's like extra frustrating. It's like, we brought you back from the dead. Please pay the bills for us. We never figured out how.
Yeah, talk about slackers.
Yeah. The dependence is just mind-boggling.
It's true. It's not just Dawn as her dependent. Like, now she has, like, 5 dependents.
And there's a really dark and particularly, like, unexplored American commentary to it, because they're like, oh, Joyce's medical bills from dying sucked up your inheritance. And it's like, oh, shit, yeah, of course. That would happen when you don't have healthcare. And then also they're like, you know, the solution to it is not like, you should charge people to pay you. It's like, the Watchers Council exists. Slaying should be a public utility where it's like, this needs to exist. Why isn't this something that everybody's taxes pay for that she can live nicely, you know?
Thank you.
Right. Okay, that's a better system that Buffy... Yeah, slayers are a public utility and Buffy gets paid through the tax system.
This is such a classic, and I don't know whether this is intentional or just by the structure of the show and he didn't realize it, but this is such a classic example of like the economy, quote unquote, as a reified thing only works with the externality of all of the maternal labor which is done and completely unpaid.
Oh, absolutely.
And slaying is a job which is explicitly and only for teenage girls that's set up by a council of patriarchs, you know? So it's like, it kind of makes sense as a really sharp commentary, I think. They just never explore it.
Well, I don't think Joss Whedon's smart enough to think about that.
Yeah.
I don't think
wages for
that.
Slaying work, baby.
Yeah. I don't think he ever thought to make that a commentary. He was just like, oh, this is just how it is. And I think like since then, like the Buffy scholars that have popped up since, you know, since the show aired have like have made those connections that Joss is just like just not smart enough as a person to put together. There's no way
he's like, oh shit, that's what I meant.
Yeah, he may try to take that credit retroactively. I don't know if he ever has, but like, no.
Tell you, I did an honors television course when I was studying, and I wrote like for one of the papers, like a Buffy studies paper, basically about the Zeppo.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm sure there's a lot to cover in that one.
And some other things. But it was basically the concept for the argument of the paper was like that Buffy, even though the notion of golden age television, prestige TV, is kind of put at the feet of a lot of HBO stuff like The Sopranos because of the use of like cinematic technique in that. Buffy is one of the earliest examples of a fully serialized television which transitions during that period. And I think that in terms of the grammar and the formalistic elements as they develop, and you can see this in something like Restless as well, which is almost a David Lynch movie, you know, that it represents the shift toward the grammar of prestige TV and that morphing the production logics with film and cinema itself. And I think it's really interesting that Buffy is totally overlooked as one of the earliest programs which sets the tone for what prestige television will be.
Yeah, because I'm not 100% sure if they ever even thought that far, you know, or thought that deeply.
Well, and it's also genre, which like doesn't get respected. Yeah. I mean, it's like starting to get more respected, but like genre doesn't get respected. And then shows for teenage girls definitely wouldn't get, you know, that kind of level of respect that like The Sopranos would get.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What's about hard dudes making, you know, like sociopathic choices, you know? So obviously that's worth critical examination, but, you know.
Yeah.
What if they did Breaking Bad, but with teenage girls?
Oh my God.
Baby, if you're in the right high school, there's so much drug circulation going on.
Yeah.
I've never seen Breaking Bad, and it just recently occurred to me that that's not his name. I thought his name was like John Breaking Bad.
Mr. Breaking Bad. What?
It's like Breaking Benjamin, but
like, you know, like House.
It's Breaking Brad.
Yeah, Breaking Brad. No, never mind.
Does this ever happen to you?
It's Breaking Bread. Joke. It's a bakery themed show about a meth dealer.
The Great British Break Off.
Yeah.
You gotta cook. We gotta cook, Jesse. It's just making the perfect tray of meth.
Oh my God.
And the thing is,
I would watch The Great British Break Off if it was about like cooking the best meth, and at the end Paul Hollywood has to test all the meth,
and Noel Fielding's just talking about how like no the same lineup, because it makes perfect sense, but Noel Fielding's talking about how like they don't make Pyrex dishes with the silica anymore, so they just shatter. And like,
yeah, he's like, I'm a goth.
You know, actually,
need Mary Berry come back, bring back Mary Berry.
Yeah.
Oh,
she's
she's
got to be like 100.
Don't care. I want to see Mary Berry tweaked out of her fucking gourd.
They can wake into Bernie Surf for the judging.
She's got her own spin-off, Mary Berry's Not Farm, and it's just about Omegaverse stuff. It's like a...
Wait, I have to go on one more tangent.
Okay.
Because I watched this last night, and it's sort of related to Buffy. I'm doing a Bones rewatch.
Hell yeah.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And I just watched an episode in season one where Brennan and Angela go to a hip hop club, and they get into a fight because Brennan is very loudly talking about like how like the hip hop drums sound like tribal drums.
Oh, I remember and, like, that specific episode. Her,
right? Yeah. And then like some crazy thing happens, a wall breaks, and then just like all this meth comes flying out of the wall and covers both of them, and they like tweak for like the first half of the episode.
Just from having it like dumped on their skin?
Yeah.
I touched a fentanyl.
Yeah, it's like the I touched a fentanyl. That's true.
I mean, Jeffersonian scientists are also cops, so yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's true.
They got cop syndrome.
Well, and they work for the FBI, the IBS.
The IBS.
They work for the IBS.
Not the IBS again.
No.
International Bone Society. Yeah, that's where they work.
Angela's like, I think I remember that. Angela's like, oh, you gotta chillax, honey. Like, come to the hip hop bar. And then she's like fucking skull measuring these black people. It's insane.
Yeah, it is an absolutely unhinged episode.
Wow.
The way I like to watch Bones is I watch the first like whatever, let's say it's 45 minutes. I watch the first 40 because I don't care about their personal relationships at all.
Yeah, when
I just
want
to see,
like,
the case. Mm-hmm. And then I just move on.
There you go. That's
what you got. Anyway, back to Buffy.
David Boreanaz is in it. Like, that's, I feel like that's
what yeah. It was his next big role.
Yeah,
I think.
His next big hit after Angel. Like, he was just coming off.
All right, so Buffy's basement is flooded. in the most like, okay. Looney Tunes way.
Yeah. I need to talk about this because this episode sent me on like a architectural engineering deep dive. Like, I have a PhD in like civil or engineering right now. I could like build a house if I wanted to. The pipes break in the inciting scene, like even before the credits. And then, like, fucking at least three days have passed. And then the the bank-robbing Mephashis demon comes to their house. And then she gets into a fist fight with him. And then, for whatever reason, she wants to get him down to the basement to, like, I guess keep the damage of her house, you know, to a minimum. She's already ruined the door, the table, the railing, whatever. So she gets him down to the basement. And the basement is still covered with 3 fucking feet of water. It's been literal days. Literally any kind of moisture, I would say maybe even like 4 inches, will completely destroy the foundations of your home within the first 24 to 48 hours. I had to read this because I was like, there's no fucking way. How did they not at least drain the water? I'm just, like, so baffled that they made that choice to, like, leave the water there.
I hate when the show is unrealistic.
I feel like if you're going to have that much standing water, then, like, the monster should be, like, a fish.
Yeah, they could have tied it in.
It's just so baffling to me. It's like they just left the water there for days and days and days. Like, forget, like, the fact that she beat him to death with a pipe. Like, no kind of, like, fancy kung fu. She just literally just beat him until his skull was on the outside with a pipe in the water. Like, just absolutely insane.
They've had the plumber through at this point as well. Like, someone's come and looked at this,
Tito?
And not fixed it.
Tito the plumber?
Tito the Magnificent, he says, or something like that.
Which, like, I feel like Xander is a little too into Tito the plumber. Mm.
Okay, I have thoughts on this.
Okay, oh good, it wasn't just me.
Just really quick, the hole that my brain patched in that sort of little situation was because Xander works in construction, he personally knows Tito. And so that's why he was a little bit more...
Yeah, he does.
Like,
he's
friendly. Okay, that's...
He does, okay. But also... Simon has something to say.
Okay.
No, and I don't think it's necessarily homosocial or homoerotic in the sense that I think a standard sort of pairing would be. It's a lot like when the plumber is standing next to Xander. What I think is really funny is that Xander is Joss Whedon's stand-in, and he's next to a man who actually looks like Joss Whedon in real life. And there's such a revealing disparity between those two. And that's why they kind of like are in love with each other a little bit. But also it's really funny that Nicholas Brendon looks like an absolute hunk. And this fucking old middle-aged man looks like shit. And it's like, oh, this one's actually the Joss Whedon. And it's really funny that he's standing next to his fanfic character, OC.
Yeah.
His fanfic character.
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh my God, that's hysterical.
I mean, like, there are a lot of places Joss Whedon wanted to put himself into, and he definitely could insert himself into his show, so.
That would have been a perfect.
Sorry, I'm sorry, I'm trying to delete it.
No, we're nope. Obviously, you know, we've been saying it since day one. Fuck Joss Whedon, for real.
Do you want to know something really? Oh, actually, I'll wait for the engagement talk for the comics bit, because I think it's really interesting.
Oh, Lord.
But yeah, absolutely what you were saying, Leslie, is that, like, there will be moisture ingress, even if the foundations didn't collapse, there's moisture ingress through the timber frames, and Dawn is just going to be coughing from black mold for the rest of her life.
Exactly! You know? In like 24 hours this can happen, black mold. Like, just...
They could have had a black mold demon.
That would have been cool! Like, I can suspend my belief for, you know, a lot of stuff, but like, there's just some stuff where it's like, you just didn't think about this. Yeah. Like, and you didn't think that other people, you thought other people would be just as stupid as you are. And that's kind of insulting to the audience, is to say like, well, they're not going to notice shit like that anyway. These fucking like mouth breathing losers who are just giving WB their money or whatever, whenever they moved over to the new network or whatever. But like, come on, like put in a little bit of effort.
I also thought of Jake Gyllenhaal's character in Zodiac when he's like, not a lot of houses in California have basements. And then,
oh, yeah.
Like, mine does, like this.
Mine does.
Buffy goes down there and there's Buffy's just like posters from this movie. And
she finds like a bunch of Zodiac.
She finds Ted Cruz down there like, and
cleaning out.
He's got his gills
basement.
Out.
The blobfish.
Ted Cruz swimming around the basement water.
See, also a better demon choice.
If they had kept the incorporeal one from the previous episode, they could have like even just had that be like an infestation of the house, you know? Like all this bad life is just coming into this like untouchable thing.
Like the Horny House.
I was going to say Poltergeist, but Horny House is good too.
When Riley flooded her basement, you mean? Was that the...
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
I loved the Horny House.
I'm so glad that
when people were having orgasms from touching the wall. Yeah.
I totally forgot about the Horny House. I am so glad that we're not on an episode where Riley is around, because I couldn't stand that motherfucker.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that was a
Mark
rough,
Blucas
that was a rough
with your fake name.
Marcus Blucas.
Marcus Blucas.
Well, luckily he's in the jungle hunting down indigenous demons.
Dude,
for, you
US
know,
government.
Some sort of black ops.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah, he's funding the Contras to beat demons.
Basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do like that Buffy has like developed some like gallows, like I guess she always had it, but she has like very intense gallows humor now because she died. When they're like, oh, you've landed on your feet, Buffy, or like, you're going to land on your feet, don't worry. And she's like, getting back on my feet after lying flat on my back.
Yeah. I feel like I know what they were trying to like go for. Like, she's like kind of trying to... She knows that everybody is like looking at her like with those like fucking puppy dog eyes, and she just wants to like kind of go back to normal. And so I think she's like trying to overcompensate getting everybody back to, you know, lighthearted normal, because that's what everybody else wants, even though she's like obviously deeply hurt and still hasn't processed any of her trauma yet. She's just kind of like, well, everybody needs me to be this specific kind of Buffy. So that's what I'm trying to do. And she just overshoots it so spectacularly, like unbelievable.
Yeah, it gets mean-spirited.
Yeah, as someone who's like can be passive-aggressive, I feel like that was just extremely passive-aggressive.
Well, there's a thing where she says to Anya, she's like, that's an idea you would have. Like, that's not like, whoa, Buffy.
That's true, yeah.
It's
that's
not
true.
A joke she would have made.
Very pointed, yeah.
Like, she's pissed. I feel like she's angry with her friends and like feels left alone, and she's like taking it out in like little bits.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense than my interpretation, for sure.
Yeah, whatever, it's all subjective.
Yeah,
could be both.
And then yeah, should we talk about the marriage stuff? Good lord,
man.
Thoughts, Imogen?
Xander just sucks so bad. Like, there's this whole like side plot where Anya is bothering Xander to reveal the fact that they're engaged to everyone, and he's just like not playing that game. He doesn't want anyone to know that they're secretly engaged. And like makes up a whole lot of man bullshit about it.
But yeah, like I'm just learning how to be a man right now, Anya.
Yeah, there's a lot of steps, and I want to make sure they're all perfect. And like, but like,
for
what
you, babe.
Yeah. Like, why did he propose? What?
Yeah.
Like, 100%. If you don't do that. But, like, I don't know. I find this whole plot, like, weird. Like, it seems, like, out of... Like, it's not related to anything, and it's just Xander sucking a lot more, which is frustrating. I don't know. Anya's, like, one of my favorite characters. She's very cool, and she's only with him because she doesn't know anything about anything.
Yeah.
Otherwise, so like...
Yeah.
You know. He doesn't deserve
it's
it.
It's like she became a human and looked over at him and was like, yep, you'll do.
Here's another human.
You say all the time, like, she's learning how to become human and Xander is the one who's teaching her. Literally the worst teacher.
Yeah. The worst at being human.
Yeah. Like, it's so sad. Yeah, I feel like a lot of this is... if they didn't progress their relationship in this way, they wouldn't really have anything to do. Like, I feel like as much as I love, you know, Emma Caulfield, and as much as I love Anya as a character, I feel like her and Xander are, like, kind of the weakest of the Scoobies in terms of, like, you know, having a role to play in the day-to-day. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, you know, obviously Joss is not going to let go of Xander because it's him. That's him in Buffy form.
He's the heart of the show.
Yeah, fucking the heart-on of the show.
It's really, really funny that they try to figure out what he is. And in season seven, after 7 years of this, they're like,
he's the heart. Yeah.
He sees everything that goes on. It's like everyone else sees it too, buddy.
Got fucking eyes. So you ain't special.
Yeah.
Well, no,
we gotta figure something out.
And then he don't. So I think it's just... It's like... he's just such an unmitigated cunt for no reason. And what's really bizarre is this is like the poison of Buffy, right? Is that the writers have it both ways, mm-hmm. where you've got to have Xander, and so he uses excuses which don't make sense and are just like not gaslighting, but like, you know, like red flags, right? With her, and then she's like, wait a minute, you confuse me with your words and your kiss mouth. And it's like, yeah, that is what happened, but also you tried to make it cutesy and like, oh, it worked on her, isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
And you're like, no, you can't have it both ways. You can't call it out and then be like, but actually, it was kissy kissy. Like, no.
Yeah, it's like, no, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I accidentally stumbled across in my own Wikipedia jaunt the comics. Mm-hmm. And it turns out in the immediately succeeding season, season 8, would you like to know what happens with Xander's love life?
No?
He's still around. So Buffy realizes that she's been in love with Xander this whole time.
No.
Apparently.
No.
Yeah.
No. Show's over.
No. This is going to get so much worse. I want you to remember who Joss Whedon is and who Xander is. And I want you to steal your basements for this next part.
Steal them.
But Buffy is put out and has to get over her jealousy because Xander... ends up dating and in love with Dawn. And and Dawn end up together forever.
Wait, what?
He and Dawn end up together forever. Yes.
I don't...
He's known her since she was 14.
I don't have a funny joke about that. I can't...
Like, I know, I don't either.
What?
I don't even have
words. And that is in... And there are different writers in the comics, but that is in an arc specifically written by Joss Whedon and credited to him.
What the fuck?
I need to leave.
Wait, this is...
Yeah.
I need this show to be over. I cannot...
Sorry, we're not going to do Buffy anymore.
Yeah,
we're going to do something
bye.
Else. This is a True Blood podcast now.
Oh, can I join you if you do that?
A famously unproblematic show.
There's a lot of shit to talk about with that show. if you guys ever do get around to doing podcasts on that,
once we run out of Buffy and then Angel and then Supernatural, then we'll get around to.
Oh, God, we'll be doing Supernatural until we're like 95. Yeah.
Is Supernatural still going or is it done? It's done.
No,
right?
I think I'm pretty sure it's done, but it was like 1600 seasons.
Holy shit.
So.
Yeah.
I think I made it up to season 9 of Supernatural, which was too many seasons.
About the same. Too many seasons. Although I do enjoy, like, I'm contradicting myself here, because I actually like weird Christian plots, as long as they aren't, like, too didactic. But the angel stuff I kind of enjoyed in Supernatural.
Yeah,
it's so weird.
It was a fun, like... I mean, especially when they were first introduced and, like, the characters were all fucked off about it. And they were like, well, if there's, like, angels and shit, why have we been doing all the dirty work? Like, they're, like, real mad to have to believe that there was, like, these good powers. Because they're like, we've lived this, like, shitty-ass lives trying to deal with, like, these horrible demons and stuff. And the idea that, like, someone could have just come in and murked them is, like, real.
It's because angels are bitches.
Real good on
I liked that show. I think that was a good show up till, like, season 5. And I feel like it should have just ended at season 5.
Yeah. There's no reason a show needs to have 16 seasons.
No.
Except for Criminal Minds.
Yeah, that's true.
I've never seen that.
That's true. That show can keep
that
going.
One can go on forever.
Mm-hmm. But I always like taking a bit of my own poison with these because I will watch anything that's like, you know, cheesy monster bullshit. And then I end up in this like massive long term multi season commitments, like wondering why I'm watching this garbage. I'm like, but there's vampires in it. I got it.
Yeah.
It's your bad boyfriend where it's like, I just can't not like, you know?
I'm in a toxic relationship with terrible supernatural TV shows.
Toxic American Yahweh, save me.
Because they don't give us a lot. Like, we get so many, like, office sitcoms and, like, cop shows and whatever. When you get a vampire show, you're like, I guess I have to do this.
Yeah. I feel like it is almost a good comparison to like a toxic relationship because all the good stuff in the show kind of is in your head, right? Like when you're watching it, it's like, oh, but all the character arcs I'm imagining in the background are really good.
Yeah, like we made it all
and
up.
Then what's on screen is just like some guy.
Once again, the fanon is better than canon and the rest is the wretched of the earth.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's right.
Anyway, back to Buffy, though. I feel like we've tangented like too hard again.
I had a bones tangent, but I'm clamping down on it, so please proceed.
No, Simon.
I like that we just reviewed like 6 or 7 different
That could be a great podcast. It's just line up, like you do like little tasters, like a wine tasting of like different like supernatural little, kind of like sci-fi shows and be like, this one's pretty good, but like
it's like, okay, what about the Sandman? Did you like that one? How about
can you taste the tannins in this Destiel centric episode? All right, do we have anything else that we want to touch on?
Well, do we want to talk about the do we care about talking more about the trio?
The only thing that I find interesting about them is the sort of like I said, the behind the scenes, the fact that they like had to bring this fucking Ham and Egger to pretend to be Tucker's brother.
Ham and Egger!
Like, you know, otherwise it wouldn't make no sense, you know.
I'm still laughing at Ham and Egger because it feels, I'm like, it's
before.
Like an old vaudeville word.
Nobody says that anymore?
I don't think
I feel like
so,
I say
but
that
they
all the
should.
Time.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, that's
they
fucking
should
Ham and
say
Egger.
It. Pull that Ham and Egger off the stage with a big cane.
Oh Lord. Anyway. I just think it's fucking hysterical that they hinged an entire season's big bad on 3 people and then they realized that they couldn't get an actor back for one of them. It's like,
that is amazing.
Then fucking change the script, my man. Like,
yeah.
Do something else.
Yeah.
Like,
try one of the many demons that we suggested in the last half an hour.
Exactly. Like, insane. I don't know
if you probably mentioned this at the start of the 6th season, but the showrunner is Marty Noxon, not Joss Whedon, but he still has his finger in the pie and he still keeps trying to do it. But it's kind of weird because she's almost like overcompensating for being like, I'm taking over and I'm the female writer, so actually I'm going to be Joss times 100, where it's like every character suffers and it sucks. Shit.
Yeah, Joss is out, but his like his stank is still on this show.
His stank.
Like, stank. Just
it's
wafting.
Hard to escape the stank of Whedon.
Got that Whedon stank.
There's not enough tomato juice baths you could take to wash off the Joss stank.
Just of a Whedon stank.
Well, and this was like peak people like buying his bullshit.
I find it really frustrating the way that the grimdark stuff sort of escalates. I find like really frustrating because it feels like they're constantly trying to one-up the sad moments from the episode before, but then they have a lot of like really kind of poignant plot elements or like character moments that just kind of get like obliterated over the season. Like they try to like one up them and they kind of like almost emotionally retcon a bunch of other stuff that's happened, which it fucks with it a lot for me. Like I find it really difficult. I think this might have been the season where we stopped watching. I'm not sure. I can't really remember.
It's
a rough season.
I found it like difficult to motivate myself to like get through. Mm-hmm. But this episode, I mean, like there is some of that like good character stuff does come through with Giles coming back.
Yes.
We didn't talk about Giles.
I was gonna
at
say
all.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Giles off... and his
sorry
his excellent like dressing down of Willow.
It's so good.
She threatens him.
But yeah, it's weird. Like I feel like her arc, and I really like can't stand Willow in these episodes. I feel it's interesting how they've tried to take like magic from being, you know, like a lesbianism thing to like, oh, is it a drugs thing? But then this like it gets to this sort of like turning point where I know we talk a lot about like how the magic is like corrupting her and stuff like that, but this almost feels like a natural kind of personality progression for anyone who kind of seeks power like that. Like the arrogance and the, you know, the want, like desperation for like recognition that starts coming through just feels like a very like human thing. And especially when like he does, like he gives her this massive dressing down. It's like, you're a stupid child, like you're dealing with these forces that you don't know what could have happened, like that you don't even know what you've fucked up at this point, like there could be circumstances that we haven't encountered yet. Mm-hmm. And it almost gets through to her, and then she like kind of protects herself with like this she pulls the blanket of her own power around her to like deliberately kind of ignore that, and it doesn't hit home. It's like really frustrating, but it's also something that you see in real life with people, and I think that's why I find it like extra infuriating, is because like that's a thing that people do, you know, when they've done something really stupid and you like try to like get through that they're doing something like terrible, and it almost hits home and then it doesn't, and they just cover for themselves. And like I find that it's like, it's good. I think it's good writing. It might be an accident.
No.
No, I think it's really good, but I also, like, it's so infuriating. I'm so glad that Giles is here for that. Like, his delivery is perfect. Like, he's always amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do think that's a good point, though, that, like, it keeps being sort of, like, driven home that the reason why Willow is bad is because of like magic, and it's like, no, she's being more human than ever. Mm.
There's, because at the start of the series you forget, unless you go back, she's a shrinking violet. She doesn't say anything. She can't muster up like saying that she likes Xander, or she doesn't do anything. And so obviously it makes sense that for a person who lived her whole life being disempowered and being beaten into submission by like her family dynamics, now that she has a taste of it, she doesn't know what to do with it, and she's like, you know, gone overboard the other end of the pendulum. It makes so much sense. Way more than the witchcraft is addiction thing. That's stupid.
It's so stupid.
It's so stupid. But it's really beautiful how they bring this up. And it would have made sense if the arc was just what happens at the end. You know what I mean? Like, who cares about the trio? It's just this, you know? And the ramifications of bringing Buffy back.
Yeah, like, she would have made a great villain for this season.
I mean, she is a great villain for this season,
but like,
you know?
More so than like having the trio. Like, if they had just like nixed them, and like, you know, it was this like slow progression of her, you know, coming to be like, just more time on that would have been so good. But yeah, I find it like she's still so like cutesy as well. Like, she hasn't like evolved from her like kind of previous like shy personality, and it's this weird like juxtaposition of like she's doing these like shitty things but still being like, oh, I'm, you know, quirky language, like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, because that is like, it's like the confidence of like a 22-year-old or, you know, however old they are, is like, you know, it's, she's still on like really shaky ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where she was a shrinking violet, you know, she was in the closet, now she's out, she has a girlfriend, she dresses like a bohemian lesbian from the 70s and like, you know, is like feeling herself, but she doesn't really have like the foundation yet. Mm-hmm. You know, for like to be a good person. She's just like, well, now I'm like power, like I have power.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes me important.
Yeah, my eyes can go black and like I can get bricked up, baby. Like,
yeah. But like doesn't understand that like sometimes the power is like not to do a thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Oh, which is so frustrating that that after her dressing down, later on, they're like, oh, she's like, oh, I could do a locator spell to find, like, the one useful example of magic she could do, and they'd find the trio straight away and shut this shit down. She's like, or not, and she resiles from it. And it's like, no!
Yeah,
no, girl!
Sucks.
Yeah, like, you can still do witchcraft, just don't do crazy shit, you know? And that's where the addiction part gets so annoying, because then it just gets...
It's like an all or nothing
thing. Right, it scapegoats witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
As like a specifically dangerous, addictive thing, rather than like the personality or like, you know, just the way people are in relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does anybody remember what she says when she threatens Giles at the end of that conversation?
She says, I can maybe look it up, but she says, like, I am powerful, so you might want to rethink about pissing me off, something like that.
Yeah, it's so explicit and out there where she's like, I could kill you, basically, is the implication. Mm-hmm. And you're like, it just comes almost out of nowhere, but it makes so much sense. And then it suddenly kind of comes, like, it's not linear, you know? It makes sense that it's in these little peaks and valleys.
Yeah, it was very, like, it felt very... like so out of place. I definitely noticed that when I was watching. I think I said out loud, like, did you just threaten Giles, you bitch? Like,
did you threaten me?
But I think Allison Hannigan plays it so well, because she doesn't like try to do it in the, like, you know, aw shucks way. Her face just switches, like goes into sociopath mode, and then just says it, and you're like, geez, like it's just so blank and concrete, and it works so well. But the thing that I like the most about Giles coming back is just the fact that we have Giles back. Like, Anthony Stewart Head is such a breath of fresh air in every scene.
Yeah,
and I'm just glad that we have him in the dynamic and in the mix, you know?
Yeah, he's an important element.
I definitely got a little misty-eyed when he is, like, stroking Buffy's hair. When he, like, sees her again, I definitely, like, got a little choked up. So I was like, oh, that's her daddy. Like, that's her dad.
Okay,
her
Leslie, let's calm down.
So I don't know daddy, but, like...
Oh, that's her daddy.
And it's with all the quote-unquote training equipment around.
Yeah.
All the hanging things and the ropes and the...
All right. I was being tender, ruin but that's fine.
You know what? I don't know if I appreciate that characterization of my contributions. I'm trying to land us Coca-Cola, all right?
Yeah. We need the big cocaine sponsorship.
That's right.
The big cocaine.
Plus a few big cocaines doing things you and I don't even know about.
Not little cocaine. Yeah, independent cocaine. Yeah. We just need big cocaine.
What about organic cocaine?
If you've got a fucking venture capital startup for cocaine, I don't want to hear about it, all right? I don't want to hear how you're disrupting cocaine. I want big, established cocaine.
It would be organic. Yeah.
There's an app.
Small batch cocaine.
Single margin cocaine. Artisan.
97-year-old
cocaine.
97-year-old craft brewery in Brooklyn still makes cocaine the old-fashioned way.
Oh, God.
There's an app you could get for it, and it's CQN.
No.
Oh my god.
Handcrafted small micro cocaine. But also it's really good to have Anthony Head back, because you're about to have a musical episode, and like I remember
just great
when we there's an episode which is like, I can't remember, I think it's a really like boring stupid one in earlier, maybe season two, but they walk into a bar and he's singing Behind Blue Eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like,
That was a very powerful moment for your old pal Leslie.
This is awakening something within me.
I mean, even Willow says, she's like, oh, I see him differently now, or something like that.
Yeah.
She's playing.
Yeah, he's singing like a Pink Floyd song.
Yeah,
no,
she's playing. Oh,
it's Behind Blue Eyes
is.
From The Who.
Thank you, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm down.
He's so good in, was it Repo?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A genetic opera.
Yeah.
Which we will someday cover.
Yeah,
we so should.
This very show.
We should definitely watch that.
He does like an amazing kind of like Hannibal Lecter sort of impression.
But also like a tender dad.
Yeah, also a tender dad. It's so good. There's so many facets.
Strange. God, he's so dynamic as an actor. I love him. Anyway.
Yeah,
there's such a width and breadth to him. Perhaps a girth. I don't know.
You could even call him a girth master.
I'm gonna fly
with 2 hours.
I'm gonna fly 18 to 19 hours and go to your house and fucking punch you straight in the solar plexus.
Kate, Imogen is thankfully not on Twitter, or else that would have been.
I don't know what you're.
But
talking
I know
about.
Who you're talking about.
I had to send that to a bunch of people. Do you know about this girth master?
Girth master.
Have you seen it?
Is this something that I need to Google for the bit, or is it?
No,
yeah.
No.
Yes,
I'm gonna
conflict
the information. I need to know now. Was it with 2 R's?
It's Girth Master with an extra R.
I don't.
I know this is the end of the show.
It's the end of the show.
Is no. this the Twitter account that's coming up?
Yeah,
it's blocked off. It says this profile may include potentially sensitive content.
Oh no!
It may include. Oh, honey,
it definitely does. I can tell you for sure.
It won't let me look at it.
It starts off with sensitive content.
It's sensitive from start to tip, like that thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, jeez. Anyway,
yeah.
We started off the episode with an emphatic joke and have not mentioned emphatic.
Cause
he wasn't that interesting.
Like he's just
what
like
up,
a weird fashion lizard man. He's a weird lizard fashion man in a flannel shirt.
Cookies.
God.
Yeah, he was a demon in flannel.
Where did he get his flannel from? Do you think? Like,
I don't
did
know.
He come? Like, is there like a warehouse in the hell dimension? You know, go like pick up some clothes.
Where you get to pick out outfits.
Yeah. Well, like, what do you
That's
guys say? Like, you'd like go to like Hell Kmart or something.
Yeah. That's where the Hanson t-shirt came
from.
Oh yeah, the Hanson t-shirt. Yeah, I got it.
There's like
a bin.
Naruto like themed little t-shirts that demons can get from the Hellmart.
Aww, cute.
Uh-huh.
Little demon kids. Demon tweens.
Yeah.
Uniqlo licensed Mickey Mouse stuff.
All right.
We're wrapping it
all
up.
All right, sounds good. Well, Simon, Imogen, thank you so much for coming on. This is
a
blast,
thank
as
you.
Always. This is probably one of our longest episodes ever, which is like incredible.
Tangents.
And just chock-a-block of bangers, man. So I thank you both for coming on. Let's do your plugs if you got stuff.
Yeah,
to plug.
I
want to
eat
I'm
breakfast.
Sure. Yeah. You guys have a whole day to start. Meanwhile, I'm just like I am so ready for bed right now.
Yeah.
Age,
it is
it
funny
comes
to
for
do a funny to do a morning podcast for me. I feel like I really had to like wind my brain up to like get the jokes
like,
going.
I'm sure the energy is so different.
I drank this much coffee, like
holy shit!
Wow, Jesus. That's a whole pot.
That's a carafe.
Is that why you turned your camera off for part of this? Is so you could just like sprint around the room?
Tweak out, like doing zoomies.
It's like a cat at 3 a.m. Uh-huh.
Zoom master.
Yeah. Anyway, we should probably do our pluggables. I am, as you mentioned, no longer on Twitter. I am on Blue Sky. I think it's just like Imogen at Blue Sky.
With a J.
It's with a J. Not with a G. And that's like it currently, but you should listen to our other podcast if you haven't already. It's called Gohan or Go Home, and we talk about Dragon Ball, the comic, not the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
I am Simon. I'm some variation of Mithras and almost everything, but some bastard started stealing my name about 10 years ago. So on Twitter, I'm at original Mithras. and then on Blue Sky, I'm just Mithras. I'm also on like Discord. It has to be some variation with numbers, which, you know, just because of the way that that worked out. But yeah, listen to Gohan or Go Home. Might have a forthcoming podcast, which is from... one of the Post Ponies members. Also listen to Post Ponies. I don't know why. Just listen to it. It's
yeah,
really good.
Yeah, Post Ponies rules.
Yeah. And as for anything else, I don't have any ongoing projects at the moment. I am too depressed to actually make art stuff. So sorry about that.
Boy. Boy, you and I might need to have a chat later because I feel ya. Oh, that's awesome. Well, if for us, for our socials, for our offerings to the internet gods,
our offerings,
our fucking, you know, effigies to the internet deities, you can check it all out at fangs.zone. You can listen to the episodes on your podcatching app of choice. Links to all of our social media accounts, as well as our Patreon, where we will eventually have, I swear to God, y'all, it's coming. We're going to have another Fangs After Dark just as soon as we can, like, get our shit together, I promise.
It's but, true. It was a long winter.
Yeah, and, yeah, the sun's out now. The jizz trees are in full bloom.
They are. And I've got 5 on my
board. Oh, Lord, yeah. Oh, you know,
Bradford pears. They smell like jizz.
Yeah, apparently they. Yeah, their pollen or whatever smells exactly like cum.
Do you know? I have a funny story about those. Which was that I was at a like folk music festival with one of my friends, and we ran into one of those trees, and we were like smelling it. We're like, "What does this smell like? Like what?" And he was like, "I don't know." And I was like. And we, like, ran into another friend who's, like, a botanist. And we were like, we found this interesting tree. It smells, like, weird but kind of familiar. And he was like, oh, yeah, those are Bradford pears. They smell like cum.
It's like, oh, yeah.
They really do. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I need to swallow more cum. I don't know what the... It's been mostly girl cum as well, which is, like, you know, it's not the same.
It's different.
The vintage
yeah.
is different. Yeah. It hasn't been bottled in the same year.
Yeah,
it's not a wine bottle of the girth mask. Anyway,
production.
No, this is definitely like mask jizz.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Got to get onto that. Yeah. It's a microbrewery. If there ever was one.
Microbrewery jizz.
Brewed entirely jizz within the pollen. Balls.
All right, this fucking show is over. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you again, see? Simon and Imogen, and we'll catch y'all next time on Fangs for the Memories.
Thank you for having
see
us.
See you, suckers.
See you, suckers.